one right here is for the people.
Welcome to Renaissance Podcast, 40th episode. I'm G, and today's guest is Kieran Keddle. He's the head coach of Double K Gym in Kent. Kieran is a highly respected name in the world of Muay Thai. Having reached the highest level in the sport with world championship victories, he now coaches and runs a very successful Muay Thai gym and is producing some of the best fighters in Europe. So Kieran, firstly, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
No, you're welcome, very much so.
We're here to talk a bit more about one of your biggest projects to date, and that is the Muay Thai Grand Prix at the famous O2 Indigo in London, and that's taking place on June 20th. You'll be teaming up with the Team Chu guys and the Nak Muay guys to showcase mm-hmm. some of the best and also some of the upcoming fighters in the UK. Before we dig into that, Kieran, perhaps you can tell us a bit about how you began your Muay Thai journey and how that evolved you to becoming world champion multiple times up to now where you run the successful gym.
I don't think we've got enough time on this podcast. No. Basically, in a nutshell, start when I was 12. It was a bit of fun for a few years, to be honest with you. I found a gym called Lumpini. It was in Orpington, which is where I lived at the time. My brother, who was competing up in Manchester, he recommended that I'd like the sport. I got hooked after several years of training. My brother Alan took the gym over from Sean Toomey, and he set up his own gym, which eventually formed into Keddle's Thai Boxing Club. Went over to live in Thailand, and I took fights of all different types, different weights, last minute. I just like fighting, to be honest with you. And that's what I enjoyed doing. Mm-hmm. It got to my sort of, you know, I fought for world titles. I won some, lost some. Obviously, I won three. I fought for seven in all. I actually drew one, would you believe? I'm very, very lucky that I got to fight around the world. I was one of these guys, I was also quite lucky, because I never really got injured either. So yeah. When opportunities come, I could always take them, and I kept myself fit. And then, again, another story was going into coaching. And now, you know, the last 2 years, I've really, really took it by the reins and set up Double K Gym. And we've got so many talent coming through, all the way from the juniors up to adults, that, you know, it's just been brilliant the last 2 years, to be honest with you. And, yeah. You know, Double K Gym's really, really, really set a benchmark for a lot of other gyms now to prove that you can go off on your own and you can do your things and you can get talent, but you've got to do a lot of networking. Yeah. So, that's a very brief story about me.
Yeah, well, how old were you when you won your first world championship?
21.
Wow, incredible.
21, yeah. I won, it was the Waco Pro World title. I won it against Lee Chesters, who was the WMC light middleweight champion at the time. What happened is, 6 weeks before, I was supposed to fight for the European title against a Dutch kid called Vincent Zwans from the Vos gym. Mm-hmm. The promoter was Dan Green, then changed it and made it into a world title eliminator because the title had become vacant.
Yeah.
And he wanted Lee Chesters to fight the winner of us two. I beat Vincent quite convincingly, and 6 weeks later I fought Lee Chesters. And to be honest with you, it wasn't a brilliant fight. Lee was a great fighter and a real big welterweight as well. We had massive tree trunk legs. And we had a game plan, which is my coach at the time, Chris Carley. So game plan was just basically to get him close, clinch him. We knew his weak point was clinch, and just try and rag him in the clinch, knee and elbow. And it, you know, it succeeded. And I upset quite a few people, really, because not many people thought I was going to win that. I was a small compared to Lee Chesters. He was enormous, like I said, coming down from light middleweight.
Yeah.
And it was a great fight in terms of tactics and game plans. It came together.
So that first championship, was that prior to you having gone to and trained in Thailand, or was that afterwards?
I'd gone briefly when I was 20 to the Fairtex camp. I'd actually fought in Thailand before that, but I never went out for long stints. Mm-hmm. When I was about 22, 23, and the longest stint was being about a year and a half, about 19 months, I believe. And I think in the space of about 5 years, I think I went 28 times or 27 times. It was crazy. I was just going over there for training camps or going over there for fights. But it was something, you know, I loved. And looking back, it was fantastic.
So mainly at the Fairtex, that's in Pattaya, right?
No. I mean, I was at Fairtex at first. Mm-hmm. And then I got an offer to train at Castlemaine Gym. The reason why I chose Castlemaine Gym was very simple. It was Gym of the Year, and it had some of the best fighters you could ever see at that time. With Anouar, Weta Rachai, Richard Jack, Yuta Jack. Mm-hmm. It had Kumpanit, John Pobb, of course, who's got his own gym in England. Richard Jack, funny enough, is one of the coaches in my gyms, Double K.
Yeah.
It was just, honestly, an incredible gym of fighters. And the manager there, well, basically not the manager, but the person who looked after the gym, was an English guy called Rob Cox, who owns now Kiat Mon Tip. And he was he was handy, obviously, him being English speaking. And, it was an amazing gym, hardcore gym, but just a great experience.
So that must have had a big influence on you. And do you attribute the success of yourself at the time and the way that you coach now?
Yes. I mean, not all, because, mm-hmm. like I said, I've got my other previous coaches, of course, is my brother Alan. And then my main coach, to be honest with you, was Chris Carley. And then I had another coach in Thailand called Mark, who was basically like a drill sergeant. And I kid you not, he'd be waking you up at 5:30 in the morning, making you go on the runs with a moped. If you're going slow, he'd slap you on the back of the legs with a bamboo stick. Wow. He'd be making you doing all the drills at the night time, making sure you're not missing anything, doing the right clinch work and doing the right sparring. And but yeah, obviously I take little bits of every coach I've trained under.
How did you find life out there? You know, the people, the food, the weather, the culture?
I enjoyed it. It's not easy, because I was in Bangkok. I wasn't at, a lot of people had gyms in like Koh Samui and Phuket.
Yeah.
But they can get some wind down time. You don't really get that in Bangkok. It's very full on. But personally, the best gyms are in Bangkok. So it is hard, because it's very fast, Bangkok. But the weather's good, the food's good. Obviously, because I was training full time, I could rest in the afternoon as well. Mm-hmm. Nothing you could not like about it.
You've hosted some big events in the past. Now you're joining forces with Philip of Team Chew. And Simon Jace, Phil was telling me a bit about him, but perhaps if you could, you know, give me a bit of background about him and his involvement.
Simon Jace, well, several years ago, he has his son, is Evan Jace, who, if you don't know, he's going to be, I mean, he's only 15 years old.
Yeah.
But he's had something silly like 60 or 70 fights already. He's a two-time junior world champion, I believe. He's an incredible talent. Simon brought him to the gym and asked me to just teach him once a week, just to add a bit of spice to his game.
Yeah.
Me and him kicked it off. You know, we got on really well as time went on. And he basically said, look, I want to do a small show in Essex, where he lives.
Yeah.
Evan was training at a gym called Benfleet at the time. And he said, do you want to help with it? You know, I can do the matchmaking. Simon knows the Leisure Centre well, knows the area well, so he got a good deal on it. And that's how that started. And of course, the next step was going for Mac Moy's show, which we did four of them. And we're still looking to do small events as well,
yeah,
as feeder shows, always our Grand Prix. Introducing him to Phil and then setting up this team. So, yeah, I mean, that's Simon. But to be honest with you about Simon, he's, I mean, obviously, I do a lot of talking, got a lot of networking. Phil's very good at matchmaking as well, and he's got his team, and I've got my team. But Simon does all the other things in a promotion, which a lot of people don't see. He's very good at getting sponsors in. He's very good at talking to people about TV networking and advertising, and doing all the things that sometimes maybe I've been punched in the face too many times and I forget. So he does it all, you know.
Yeah.
So it works fantastic. You know, the Neck Moy shows that me and him did. Again, they're only small events. We're talking 400 or 500 people.
Yeah.
But they were, they were good events.
You mentioned that alongside Team Chew and Double K, probably two of the biggest gyms, especially in the South, with some of the best upcoming fighters, as we mentioned before. You know, who are the main fights to look out for, you know, come June 20th? We had a brief chat before at the last MTC show. You know, we already knew there was a lot of hype about this event, and a lot of people were talking about it already. What's the main things to look out for on fight day?
Well, to be honest with you, this June 20th show is obviously the launch of our product, and we wanted to get it out there, and we wanted to get the local guys, not just Team Chew, not just Double K fighters. We wanted to get, you know, Salah involved as well, and some young fighters as well, like John Haggie. We wanted other faces around London involved, and not just make it a show just about me and Chu.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, obviously, the main fight is Salah. He's obviously fighting next week at Lion Fight for the Lion Fight belt, so good luck, Salah. And he's fighting Josh Turbo. Josh Turbo was obviously beat Salah 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Turbo was very tall, very good clincher, very good scorer. And as we know about Salah, very explosive, very good with his elbows. But they've both grown over the last 4 years. Turbo's obviously made a little name for himself now, getting some good names and good victories. Salah's...
He's done a fantastic job of really getting out there, yeah.
Yeah, yes. And Salah's just been good at fighting abroad. He's done really well in marketing himself. And they're both young guys. So it was the right time to make a rematch. So it's a fight that Salah's asked for as well.
Yeah.
It's a fight that Turbo's, you know, happily accepted. And that's going to be a good fight. Clash of styles.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it doesn't work. But in this occasion, because it's a rematch, it's going to be good.
Yeah. And who else?
Of course, we've got Matthew Chu on the card. We've got also Jonathan Haggerty. They're fighting Scottish opponents. And the Scottish team, to be honest with you, they're no pushovers. The one that's fighting Matthew Chu, Woodcock, is it just beat Paolo de Silva. Yes, it was out of Paolo de Silva's weight division, admittedly, but still, it's a good scalp for him. And then you've got Annabelle, who's stepping up a weight division. She's fighting Sophie Gallardo, Scotland's number one. And then you've got Jonathan Haggerty, who's only 18 years old, from Team Underground, who's fighting Ross Cochran. But again, these Scottish guys, they don't lay down. They've come to fight, you know.
Yeah.
And it's always good to have rivalries anyway. But, you know, England, Scotland, it's going to be a good little team game as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. The flags will be flying high, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about the card is, I don't know if you've noticed the name, of course, it's called Revenge or Repeat.
Yeah.
We've also, on the card, is Jamie Whelan.
Yeah.
And he's fighting a Portuguese fight called Roy. Now, they fought in February with under K1 rules. And, and obviously I'm the corners, I'm a bit biased. I thought Jamie clearly won. But that night in Portugal, we also had Grace Spicer, who's also rematching against Marina Zufia. And both of them too got absolutely robbed. And I mean terribly robbed. So them two are going to be rematching as well. So it's a little bit of obviously there's quite a few rematches going on.
But
it's not just what the fighters want, it's what the public have wanted. So I've had messages from people who want to see the fights again. So let's get it on.
And one other good revenge story is the repeat fight between David Chu and Sean Weidman. Weidman. That was the I've seen the video. I've seen the fight. I've got my own thoughts about it, but there was some controversy about the decision in which Dave lost. That was on away ground. This will be on home turf, so that's definitely my fight of the night to watch out for.
Yeah, but you know what it is. I just want to sort of say it before people think it is. In England, we're fair and just. We do things. We've got an independent board, which is the IBMTO, and the decision is made, and it'll be the right decision. If we lose fair and square, we'll lose fair and square. And, you know, Muay Thai Grand Prix don't want to be one of those shows or products. And, you know, I've had tons of fights go abroad and get robbed.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen on my show. I want my show to be a product. You know, Muay Thai Grand Prix, I don't want to see robberies happen. And yeah, it won't happen. The right decision will happen. And, you know, David Chu rightly won that fight in Germany. But these things happen, you know. Yeah. He knows now. So he's been training hard from all accounts, I feel. So he's got to make the right decision, no doubt. Wildman will come over and try and, you know, go against the critics. So it is an interesting match. But, you know, David clearly won that fight, but now he's got to make it happen in England.
Yeah. All right, so tell me about the four-man tournament.
Yeah.
That's something that I haven't really seen too much of in the Muay Thai world, but it's something that I'm very excited about. So perhaps explain to our listeners what it consists of.
It's a four-man tournament. We've got two reserve fights as well. It's a full Thai rules tournament. There's two semi-finals, and the winner goes through to the final, and the winner will get Muay Thai Grand Prix, the first ever belt, of course, and £2,000 in cash.
Wow.
Like I said, it's full Thai rules, so punches, kicks, knees and elbows. And it's 3 3-minute rounds. The final and even the semi-final, if it's a draw, will go an extra round. For a fighter, it's a hard, hard night. It can be a real hard night. For coaches, you have to obviously have a good game plan and tactics. But for a fan, I think it's some of the best things tournaments. I really do. You know, everyone's got their favourite. They want, obviously, people buy tickets to see who they want to win. But I just think they're brilliant. They're always controversial tournaments and always gets people on the edge of the seat. So we decided with Muay Thai Grand Prix, every show we do, we're gonna introduce a tournament. But all tournaments we're going to do will be under full Thai rules. So in the future, the plan is to bring over foreign opposition and put them into four-man tournaments with bigger prize monies.
Yeah.
So we're going to launch it with a decent 63 kilograms four-man. So it's going to be good.
Yeah, so can you give us some of the names and a bit of background on some of the fighters?
We've got Adam Lee Mason, who's from Double K Gym. Adam Lee Mason's been around a while. He's racked up 25 fights. He's a bit of a tough guy. Keeps coming forward very aggressive. He's fought in Thailand as well. But, you know, he's been very inactive over the last few years. We've then got a Thai that's based in Brighton, but training under John Jarvis's gym, Lumpini Crawley, called Super Kim, who, strangely enough, would you believe, in 1999 fought me.
1999.
Yeah, would you believe? He's had over 250 fights. He's a little bit older. He's
yeah,
mid-30s. He's a heavy kicker. He's actually one of the smallest guys in the division. Won't have to cut too much weight.
Yeah.
The third guy we got is Femi, who's Femi Akindeyi, and he's coming from a Diablo gym in North London. A very, very good counter-puncher, heavy puncher.
Yeah.
And he could be one of the dark horses of the tournament. He actually won one of our previous Nak Moy shows on a four-man, and he was very impressive then.
Yeah.
And then the fourth guy we got is Joe Himsworth, who steps in for Yahya from KO Gym. He had various issues why he couldn't enter the tournament. Joe Himsworth, again, he's probably considered the least favourite, but sometimes that's, you know, sort of a blessing because the pressure's off.
Less pressure.
Yeah, of course. And he's from Renegade Gym, trained by Andy Ferguson and Mark Baxter. So it's a good mix, four different styles. And like I said, I can literally just guarantee it's going to be exciting.
What is the expected waiting time, you know, after a fighter comes off to fight again? Because I just imagine the, you know, the warming up, then the fight, you know, the, you know, it could go all the way, and then you cool down, you know, your your shins and your legs could be battered, you know, it's the prospect of then having to go out again and fight.
Yeah, I mean, what we're going to do is we're going to kick the main event off, then there's going to be six fights, two semi-finals, then the final. So they've got a six-fight gap, which is probably about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you need a little bit of luck as well, because you could win a fight easily, but you could get cut. Or you could have a real hard fight, and you know the guy you're fighting in the finals had an easy fight. There's lots of things that can happen. Not always the favourite fighter wins. So again, you need an element of luck, you need a good tactics and game plan. But you know, like I said about four mans, I love four mans. A lot of people don't, some purists don't, they just like the one-off fight, but I really generally like them.
Yeah, and as a neutral fan as well, you're rocking up on the day, you know, you might be going there because of a friend's fighting, or you know, one of your teammates fighting. Then you get this exciting four-man tournament where after the first match, everyone's already made their minds up as to who their favourite is and who they want to see go all the way. So it's no, it's definitely a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So that's going to be on the 20th of June at the O2 Indigo. A question I wanted to ask you, Kieran.
Yeah.
Your role as a mentor. You know, we had previously Charlie Boy Peters on the podcast. So spoke very highly of you. How you helped influence him to go to Thailand and to your old gym, I believe. I just wanted to know a bit what your philosophy was as a coach and as a mentor, and basically what you bring to the table for your students.
Well, I every fighter that comes to the gym that wants to fight, or you know, is starting off as a fighter, I treat them all differently. You know, for example, with Charlie, he's a guy that he already has natural drive and push. He wants to be, you know, he wants to be one of the top guys in the country. He wants to be a world champion. So he already has that motivation. My job for him is obviously sharpening his tools, keeping him fit. But he's not the type of guy that I need to text and or call him up and say, why haven't you been training? Or because he'll never miss a session. And there are other fighters that sometimes need to push. So when it comes to sort of that side of things, you know, the philosophy side and how I coach people is I deal with everyone differently. I like to have a lot of one-to-one time with fighters and speak to them just about outside life as well, because that can affect stuff that happens when they're training and stuff that can happen when they're fighting. As a coach, especially as time goes on, you do get closer to them. There's no denying it. So it's important that you know what mindset they're at before they go out and compete. And a good coach will not just keep someone fit and work on tactics, but also know where their head's at. It's important. And that's what I try and do. I try and get into the fighter's head. I try and work with them and try and guide them. Like I said, I was very lucky when I was fighting. I had some good coaches and some good opportunities. But nowadays, there's more and more opportunities coming all the time. There's some big shows. And I just try my best to, as much as possible, hold their hand and, you know, straight into the ring and get them fighting, you know? So that's my thing. I'll try and get as close as possible to my fighters. And I try and do my best for them. And, you know, 99% of the time, they always come back with good results, or, you know, win, lose, or draw, as long as they've fought their heart out. It's what matters to me.
Yeah, I like the way that you put some impetus on the mentality of the fighter and their state of mind.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You've got to. It's
a big part of the game, right?
It's a big part of the game. It's you know, like I said, everybody's got different drives and I try to find out what the right button is to push. And sometimes it's just a little motivational thing, like nowadays, just a motivational thing like sharing a post on Facebook or sending them a text or something like that. And in the corner as well, I'm not a type of person to shout at people. I'm just a type of person to talk to them. Yeah, and that's how I do things. And that's how I've done things my whole way. I'm not an aggressive person in any way at all. I was very competitive, but not aggressive. And that's how I try and talk to my students and work my students that way. Yeah, everyone's got their own way. But that's my way.
Would it be fair to say that's the way that you kind of live your life outside the ring and outside of the of your gym?
Yeah, you know, I'm blessed, to be honest with you. I'm in a job that I enjoy. I have no problems getting up in the morning to go to work, let's put it that way. I do a lot of hours and, you know, I've got a family as well, a young family. So, you know, I'm very lucky all round. So, you know, like if I'm happy and you've got a happy coach, then you'll find that you've got happy fighters as well.
Yeah.
And if you've got a coach that seems to be, you know, down and out about everything, complaining about everything, you see it rubs off. I try my best not ever to be late for anything, or try to be as punctual as possible. And I try and obviously be a guide as much as possible to fighters. And hopefully it rubs off. Can't always, but I try my best.
And what's some of the best advice that you've received?
Best advice I've received? You know what? When I was first training and was first fighting, I was just basically going in the ring and fighting. Literally just, you know, to hit pads as hard as possible, etc., etc. And then the beauty of things, YouTube come along so we could get tactics for fights and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, like I talked about earlier, I had a coach called Chris Carley, used to watch all the videos together. And it's not just one bit of advice, but it was a numerous amount of advice that this man used to give me. And, you know, he was one of the guys who taught me about taking fighters to a side and having a word with them individually, like he used to do with me.
Right.
So this is what I do. So it's not exactly words as such of advice, but it was just the amount of advice this person gave me. You know? So, yeah, Chris was one who used to give me a lot of advice.
How do you see the Muay Thai sport evolving over the next 5 years?
I mean, it has evolved in terms of production on shows. It's got bigger, that's for sure, and attendances have got higher. It's getting people. The problem is you've got the Muay Thai purists who want the 5 rounds, 3 minutes, you know, and you've got the 2 minute breaks, and you've got the Thai music. You've got the ritual dances, the Ramwai, the Waikaru. You've got sometimes, you know, the long clinches. A lot of people don't understand also the scoring. But people are starting to adapt and change to this. And, you know, seeing Muay Thai as a bigger sport. And you can see over the last, few years, with some big shows now around Europe and the world, really.
Yeah.
That is getting bigger. In the next 5 years, I can see it slowly getting bigger. There are some changes that need to be made. And when it comes to media people and people in Muay Thai, they're two different people. In fact, people in martial arts and people in media are two different people. So those two people need to meet in the middle.
Yeah.
When they do, then we're going to get a series of shows, regular shows, we're going to see it on television. But getting them to agree is a hard thing. Two different types of people, so that's the thing.
All right, well, do you have any other big events planned for 2015?
November the 22nd will be Muay Thai Grand Prix, the second
installment episode. Yeah.
And I'll give you a little hint, not really a hint, I'll give away something. We're bringing over a team of Thais.
Against
English opposition. So what we will do is on the June show, we're going to announce a couple of them. So, again, nothing's 100% confirmed because nowadays you have to do contracts. Not like the old days where you make a phone call.
Yeah.
You need to do contracts now.
Yeah.
So contracts are being sent off and we're going to bring over some tyres. And against high-level opposition from England.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, congratulations on your success. I can't wait for... I mean, unfortunately, I'm going to be in Vietnam on June 20th.
Okay.
There was...
That's a shame.
So where can the listeners get tickets for the O2 event on June 20th?
Yeah, go to the website, which is access, which is axs.com, Muay Thai Grand Prix. Go on there. You've got all the range of tickets from ringside all the way down to standard seating. And actually, I've been told today that ringside is sold out. So standard tickets up to second row are available.
Okay, well, I'll put a link to that when I release the podcast page.
Nice.
Also, you can follow the Kieran and his gym on Twitter. At Double K Gym.
Yep. You can also follow Muay Thai Grand Prix, Muay Thai GP, and that's on Instagram and Twitter. This one
right here is for the good stuff. All right, Kieran, again, for the work and the contribution that you're doing for Muay Thai, we applaud you. Thank you very much. And guys, get those tickets. Muay Thai Grand Prix at the O2 Indigo on June 20th. All right, cheers, Kieran. Thanks. Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youths, cause it's not like the future depends on it. We'll save the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them a make big money. This is how the media pillages, on TV the picture is savages and villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a khaki pants and all of a sudden you a say a Indiana Jones, and I take all the gold and take all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and I ever known, with the worst on this place that the world can see, and that's all that will ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like it'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them still can't defeat and them coulda never clone. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord. Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat, if you went too far you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape changed again everybody would have started love. The average man can't prove of most of the things that he chooses to speak of, and still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Scholars teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose start running. And the rich get stitched up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with a wet mud. Can they re-science? Can they restart?